From NPR News, this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Joe Palca. Coming up, we'll talk about a new report on genetic variability in humans, but now Science Friday goes to the Grammys. Well, why? Here's the story. It turns out that one of this year's Grammy Award-winning albums was called The Live Wire. It's an amateur recording of a 1949 Woody Guthrie concert in Newark, New Jersey. It's the only known recording of a live performance by the late folk singer, and it was made on an obsolete piece of equipment called a wire recorder. A team of engineers took the old analog recording and converted it to digital, and then a math professor from the University of New Hampshire did some mathematical repair work on the digital version to make it sound better. It was so good, in fact, that it earned them the 2008 Grammy for Best Historical Album. Joining me now to talk about this audio restoration is Kevin Short. He's a professor of mathematics at the University of New Hampshire in Durham and is part of the team that won the 2008 Grammy for Best Historical Album. He joins me today by phone from his office in Durham, New Hampshire. Congratulations on the Grammy and welcome to the program, Dr. Short.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
And if you'd like to join the discussion, give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And if you want more information about what we're talking about this hour, go to our website, www.sciencefriday.com, where you'll find links to our topic. And you can also join in this discussion by going to the Second Life and listening. And there's a group of people gathering on Science Friday Island, and you can and join them and chime in from there if you wish. So, Dr. Short, I mean, I guess I know that this project involved many people, and I wonder if you'd set the stage for us about what happened before you got involved, and then we'll take it through when you got involved. So how did this all get started, this restoration project?
Well, I guess it started back in 1949 when they recorded the original concert.
Wow. And maybe, can you tell me what a wire recorder is? Because I think I've heard of them, but I can't really picture something.
That's pretty much the best reaction we get. It turns out that just after World War II, they came out with these wire recorders that would take the kind of wire you used to find in the hardware store, and they would run it over a magnetized head, and they could record. They were primarily used for dictation machines, but you know, some musicians got hold of them and started recording some things. But by 1950, it had pretty much been replaced by tape. I guess tape came in around 1950. And so they're fairly obscure, but it really is the kind of wire that it looks just like the wire you would have gotten in a hardware store.
So you've got a spool of wire, and you record onto it, as opposed to something thin like magnetic tape. So this recording was made by a guy who had one of these machines, and what happened to it for 50 years?
Well, his name was Paul Braverman, and he was a student, I guess, at Rutgers, and went over to the concert in Newark. He knew that Woody Guthrie was a important person in folk music and also, you know, political positions and things. So he went and recorded it and afterwards sort of decided, you know, this could be interesting someday to somebody. So instead of throwing it out or recording over it, he put it in a box and stuck it in the back of a closet and promptly forgot about it.
sounds familiar somehow.
Yeah, so apparently it gets pretty interesting. He was moving at some point and, you know, sort of cleaning out the house, and this was right after, I guess, September 11th. He boxed it up and sent it into the Woody Guthrie Foundation.
Ah, so he found it, knew what it was, and mailed it to the Guthrie Foundation, but it came on right after 9/11.
That's right. So getting a box full of heavy wire was a little bit scary at that time.
Yeah, I'm sure. But anyway, they eventually took it out, and what did they do with it?
Well, at first, I think they didn't know what to make of it, and then sort of started asking around and realized that it actually was likely to be a recording on wire. And, you know, you can't exactly run down to the corner Radio Shack and get a wire recorder, so they had to track down what to do with it. And even the old wire recorders wouldn't be very high quality. They were not high fidelity things. But a guy named Art Schifrin over in Queens, New York, had converted a tape player so that it could read the wires. And so they worked with him, and at that point, I think they brought in the guys from the Magic Shop, Steve Rosenthal, who was also in the group.
The Magic Shop, what's that?
It's a studio in New York.
Oh, I got it. Okay.
They've actually been well-recognized for their restoration work. And they also, they did a first pass on it and realized that wire is not like modern recording, so there's a lot of wobble and things in the wire recording. And so they brought in Jamie Howarth from Plangent Processes, and Jamie is built his company around how you fix the timing in these things so that you can make it like more like a modern recording.
I see. Okay. So, and I, as I read some of the descriptions, it was a bit of a nightmare getting this stuff off the wire and onto a digitized, but they did it.
That's right. I mean, being the mathematician, I get to sit back in the office and just wait till someone sends me a digital file.
Yeah.
But I mean, I heard this was like a 36-hour effort. I think Jamie held his finger against the wire to keep the tensioning. So he's now the human tensioning device.
Wow.
And one of the other guys in the magic shop, I think it was Brian, the wire would break because it's got to be really tense. And now, remember, this is 50- or 60-year-old wire.
Yeah.
So when they keep it under tension, and then it snaps. And when it snaps, it snarls. And so he had to sit and pull these things out painstakingly so that you wouldn't lose Woody, because if you lose any of the wire, you lose this historical treasure.
Right, right. So, okay, so one day the file comes to you. Or I presume, how did they identify you as someone who they'd want to work with?
Well, actually, I had met up with Jamie Howarth earlier. I had, in the past, started a music compression company, and I had developed some technology to shrink music files down small enough so that you could send them to cell phones. So, like, the company I started actually runs the Sprint Music Store. And so I had been going to Audio Engineering Society conference meetings and publishing papers on sort of how you analyze the audio, because I was really sort of building up mathematical models of what was going on in these audio signals. Now, originally I was working on nice things that came off of CDs, but Jamie heard about my work and contacted me actually about 6 months before the project came down the pipe for the Woody Guthrie stuff.
I got it. Okay. So now you've got this file, and what can you do with it? How much can you fix it after you get your hands on it?
Well, the biggest difficulty with old recordings is that the motors weren't as good, the controls weren't as good. So we've come to expect sort of perfection in recordings now that we have CDs. And when they try to take these old recordings and convert them to CD, it's very much more unforgiving. And you can hear all the imperfections from the original recording. So sort of the inspiration that Jamie had from his background in recording studios was that a lot of these problems were probably caused by, a ball bearing in the tape machine starting to wear a little bit,
right,
or things like that. And he decided to go looking on these tapes to try to find a signal that would tell them whether the original tape machine was speeding up or slowing down. And that was the cool thing that he found, that, normally CDs are sampled 44,100 samples per second.
Right.
And so he got some special equipment so that he could digitize things at like 384,000 samples a second.
Whoa, so that's a lot more.
That's right. And what they were able to find was certain signals that were actually just sort of like in the magnetic residual on the tapes that would show what the tape machine was doing, whether it was speeding up or slowing down.
Now, we have two clips here that we have, and are you? These are before and after, I understand. These are the before. The first one was presumably the way it sounded when you first got it. Is that, or do you know which the tape that we have in hand?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little difficult unless you sort of have headphones on and to tell for sure what the improvements and things are. But
well, hang on one second, because we were originally going to do this. We were going to think about playing them back to back, but we were thinking also about playing them simultaneously and going back and forth between them. So why don't we do it the way the do it simultaneously and go back to back? I know that's not what we had originally decided on, but maybe I can just call for it to go one way or the other, and you can help us. All right, now we're set up to do that. So we'll start with the original, and we'll hear a couple seconds of that, and then we'll flip to the other one. Okay. Here we go. So that's the original.
Most likely she'll stop.
And now change.
Most likely she'll fall.
And now maybe switch back. That's back to the new one. So what are we hearing there? I mean, I'm hearing a little hiss. I've got headphones on, but I suspect that someone with a small car stereo isn't hearing all that much.
Well, that's partly because you're in the car. But one of the things is that there's a there's a degree of twanginess to the original. And this isn't even one of the bad sections, but there's a degree of twanginess so that there's a wobble in the sound. There is a lot of background noise as well. And there's a lack of precision in, like, the attack of the notes, the strumming of the guitar. Normally when someone strums a guitar string, you hear a real snap.
Mm-hmm.
And those kind of things get smeared out when there are timing errors and things like that. So when you listen to the second one, particularly if you have it right there, coming out of speakers or in headphones, you'll hear that there's much greater precision in the attack. In the Woody Guthrie stuff, we actually had cases where, at least I did, I couldn't understand the lyrics at all.
Uh-huh.
And there are sections where there are actually conversations between Woody and his wife Marjorie. And he was telling family stories, and I was misinterpreting them completely.
Wow.
Sort of like the example I would use is when my son overhears every fifth word of a conversation and jumps to a completely wrong conclusion.
Right, right. But what I want to get to is there is a mathematical description, or you can characterize mathematically what it means to have a clear attack from a guitar?
Oh, sure.
Oh, okay.
So what it comes down to is we find and isolate that signal that tells us whether the original recording device was speeding up or slowing down. And we then look at the mathematics to say, okay, this is what they measured on the tape, but if that was the result of speeding up and slowing down, we put it back to the original form.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Now, the best example I can give you is probably something that people who have been using car stereos, or at least for 20 years, would know. And that's when you have a favorite tape, you stick it in the car stereo, and it gets eaten.
Yes.
Right. So
usually it's the one that your child has been screaming for the last 6 hours.
That's right. Or it's your favorite.
Or it's your favorite, yeah.
You played it the most, right?
Yep.
And so you take it out and you desperately try to save it. So you either stick a pencil in one end and try to tighten it up, or stick your finger in there and tighten it all up. In the course of doing that, it usually gets kinked. It gets stretched out in different places. Sometimes it gets put onto the spool not as tightly as in other places. And when you play that back, if you've experienced this, most people probably remember that the pitch goes down and up and down. And usually you hope that's just a small section and you can get back to the good stuff. But when the tape is stretched, it totally distorts the music. And that's what we had in the Woody Guthrie case. It was just distorted almost everywhere to some extent. And it made it sound like, Woody wasn't singing on pitch and things like that. So when we fixed it, that was all stabilized, and suddenly you felt like you were part of the performance again.
Wow. We're talking with Kevin Short. He's one of the winners of the 2008 Grammy for Best Historical Album, but his day job is professor of mathematics at the University of New Hampshire in Durham. I'm Joe Palca, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's take a call now, and I guess everybody's been listening. I just think this is amazing, but let's hear what our listeners have to say and go to Cliff in San Leandro, California. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I worked for Ampex 50 years ago and the pioneer in tape recorders. And prior to that time, tape recorders had been preceded by wire recorders, which I believe were developed either in Denmark in 1910, and the Germans took it over and used it in World War II. Anyway, my question for your guest is, does his system of restoring these historic recordings, does he have software that would apply to old 78 records?
So to go straight from 78 to digital and then do the repair on that file?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
In fact, the technology, that's the nice thing about doing it in sort of a mathematical framework, the technology will work on any recording that has reasonable distortions that we can handle. And so we've applied it to 78s. We've applied it to now wire recordings. We've applied it to tapes from, the 60 great groups of the 60s and 70s. And so it seems to apply in all cases. And I should also mention that Ampex won a special award at the Grammys and for the development of the tape machine that sort of introduced high-fidelity recordings. And I was able to meet some of the engineers who were responsible for that. So it was sort of a nice coincidence.
Nice. Thanks, Cliff. Thanks for your call. Let's take one more call now and go to Brian in Menlo Park, California, down the road.
Yes, hello. Thanks for letting me talk.
Sure.
I was listening to the excerpts as you alternated back and forth between the original recording and the digitally cleaned up one.
Uh-huh.
And I prefer, you know, I didn't hear enough long excerpts to detect serious fluctuations of pitch, but I like the original sound better because it has more atmosphere to it.
Huh.
It had the feeling of actually being at a concert, whereas the digitally cleaned up one sounded kind of cold and sterile, as if I were in a studio somewhere.
Huh.
There's a local station that plays big band music, and sometimes they play digitally cleaned up versions of the recordings from the 20s and 30s. And to me, they're not as involving because they don't, again, they don't have that atmosphere, that feeling, and they're not giving the sound that the original audience heard.
Well, that's.
So I think the original one, I almost had a visual sense of being outdoor at a concert.
Well,
and then suddenly I was in this rather clinical studio.
I'd be interested. That's an interesting point. Thank you. Kevin Short, what do you make of that?
Well, I think, I mean, they're listening to something that's coming over a radio, so they're not really quite experiencing it the way they should. And what we're doing is not really an attempt to do digital cleanup. It's quite different. What we're doing is we're correcting the timing so that it's equivalent to what it should have been. Right. So we're correcting an original recording difference. So it's not the same thing as trying to change the sound. In fact, this is done for archival purposes.
Right. But the tape, you can clearly hear that there's a hissing that's been taken out between the original version and the repaired version.
Oh, sure. So, I mean, there's a warmth to hiss, and there's a this is very similar to one of the things people talked about when digital recordings were originally introduced. There was a warmth to, you know, old vinyl. But a lot of that warmth had to do with background noise.
Right.
And so, you know, industry wants to move away from that.
Right, right. No, and as a psychologist, I'm always tempted, you know, it's what we think of as warm and friendly. If we happen to grow up on vinyl, that sounds warm and friendly. This new generation is going to think digital is got something, and whatever replaces it will be the warm and friendly.
Yeah, that's true.
But anyway, I'm afraid we've run out of time. So thanks very much for joining me today.
Good talking to you. Thanks for having me.
Kevin Short, congratulations again. He's with a 2008 Grammy winner for Best Historical Album and professor of mathematics at the University of New Hampshire. We have to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll be talking about human diversity as measured by DNA, so stay with us. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.